This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Finding God in the Seasons of Divorce, Volume 1, Autumn and Winter, Seasons of Loss and Sorrow. And the author is Richard D. Crooks. And Richard joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Steve.
Thank you for being with us. This book has your personal experiences to help those who are struggling through divorce and other helps from the Word of God. A very significant book for those who are going through this crisis. Let me read what you have written, a little bit more details about your book. You say this: this book is a collection of daily Christian meditations specially written for those who are caught in the throes of divorce, but also useful for others experiencing major losses in life. In the book, I seek to offer support on a daily basis. Other helps out there are often in the form of a weekly meeting or occasional counseling session, but this book provides something to encourage and help day by day. And in the book, sharing from my own experiences helps people realize that they are not alone or weird. No matter how it feels during this bizarre struggle of divorce, others have also faced the same struggles and survived. And I'm sure when you're going through this, you wonder if you're going to survive because it's so painful, right?
Yeah, it's been to be pretty tough, pretty lonely. I'm not sure everybody experiences that. There's some that,
right,
you know, but it's pretty devastating for folks.
Yeah, and some others may not admit it, but deep down in their souls, they may be wondering, you know, what's wrong with me? Why couldn't I make this work?
Oh, absolutely. There's a real sense of taking the blame or feeling like I messed up everything or I'm now a failure.
And, right.
You know, there's a lot to that.
What, you know, have I sinned? That, I'm sure for Christians, some may feel that weight.
Oh, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I talked to a young gal not too awful long ago, and her first response when she had just recently got divorced, it made her wonder if God ever would love her again.
Right.
Kind of sad.
Well, Richard, tell us a little bit about your background and why you decided to write this book.
Well, my background, I've done a lot of different things in life, but the context of this book has been mainly that I've served as a pastor for a number of years and a campus minister. And in the midst of all of that, I also experienced a divorce myself. My wife filed for divorce some years ago. And I found, as I dealt with people who've been divorced, that from a pastor's perspective, when I did it, say, in a counseling session or just a happened casual conversation, before my divorce, I was probably helpful. I hope I was. But after my divorce, all of a sudden, it was a whole different level, almost like you're reaching into a hidden subculture in America and was able to connect with people in a much deeper way. And I found their response was radically different. They felt more encouraged and sometimes not so alone. And as we put all that together, I realized some of the things I dealt with myself as well as things I'd seen, it'd sure be nice if people could have something like this. Because it's a lonely time, and I find that often, like when I was pastoring with people, you didn't always have time to be there every day for a conversation. And the book allows them to have some of that support. And I'm a big student of the Bible in lots of different ways. I had some pretty extensive training in that. And it's hard for people to know how to find the help they need in the Scriptures. And this book is laid out in ways that can help them jump right to things they would need.
Well, tell us about these daily devotionals. That's a unique aspect of your book. Daily, we can get some support, some encouragement, and even get some, some teaching, some feeling that God is near us through His Word.
Yeah, and that's the goal. I'm a person that's always been big on daily devotionals in my own life, and used a lot of different things, and they've really enriched a lot of my understanding. And I found during my divorce time, as I went through that, that sometimes that time in the scripture was the only thing that got me through a day. I would find something that I could hang on to. And so I just kind of pulled some of that together and shared it here. And it's designed as a daily devotional, although some people may jump around by topics. I could easily imagine, as a matter of fact, one of my friends looked at some and did, but I can imagine the day that somebody's going to go to court to negotiate something over children, where they can go to the index, find specific readings about children that could help them.
Not only do we have these daily devotionals, you have some special days, special holidays. You have, other special days of your birthday, your ex's birthday, the wedding anniversary. Now, tell us about why you included those kinds of days in the book.
Well, even with people who've lost a spouse, as one of the people who read it shared with me, you know, those holidays, that first cycle, when you're by yourself and you're having to restructure everything, can be very, very difficult. And sometimes the memories are overwhelming. And, you know, I remember a shift for myself, like in Christmas, that getting out Christmas decorations again was hard, and trying to figure out how to adjust, how to change, so that would fit where I'm at now. And some of those holidays are days, like you said, your ex's birthday, or your old anniversary, that people, you know, in regular devotional books might not think that much about, but for a person going through a divorce, they stick out, and they can haunt you. And so that first year through, especially, having something to kind of help you think through how you redirect stuff can make a lot of difference.
We're talking about Memorial Day, Labor Day, MLK Day, President's Day, Valentine's Day, Easter, Mother's Day, Father's Day. You're covering them all, along with Independence and Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. It's all those days, like you just pointed out, probably have memories.
Yeah, well, and memories, and the fact that all of a sudden, if you have children involved, the way you celebrate the holiday has changed. You may not get to see them Christmas Day. You might only get them Christmas Eve or Halloween. This may not be a year you get to go with your kids out or Easter. You know, you have to learn how to adapt and adjust and how to work things out as best you can with your ex and with the kids. And it's a different thing.
Now, your book is also includes a focus not only on people going through divorce, but just people going through other kinds of losses.
Yeah, you know, anytime we experience loss, I mean, I think of people that we've seen in recent years and recently in hurricanes who lose their whole livelihood and try to figure out how do I put life together from here. And, you know, there's devotionals there about loneliness. There's devotionals about how do you make choices when you feel like you've lost everything, and how does God fit into that equation? Is he there? How do you access him? What about, you know, your support network and being able to develop one? And there's just so many parallels. Even though divorce has its own unique things, there's a lot of it that's very similar to other kinds of losses.
And then often people who are going through divorce, or, you know, the divorce is finally finalized, the way they're treated by others, they have to deal with that. Often it changes.
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting that you talk to people and you'll hear all sorts of different reactions from people that were friends before. Some of them aren't sure what to do with you, or sometimes I've heard of people being a little standoffish, as if they're going to either catch it or you're going to take your spouse away from them. And in the church, it's been really hard because our theology often gets in the way, and we have a hard time figuring out how do you connect with people going through this without damaging your theology. And yet, you know, these people are at a point they need that contact. And sometimes we don't do it so well. I've heard some pretty tough stories from people who felt like they were let down, or maybe even asked not to come back to our church, or, you know, that people wouldn't know how to relate. And I was guilty of some of that to a degree even before, because I remember a person visiting with me as a pastor, and needed hours and hours of time, and I didn't always have hours and hours of time, and I didn't really understand how he was feeling. And so it's hard to build that bridge.
It isn't necessarily a self-help book. It isn't necessarily a theological exposition on divorce, and it's not necessarily a prescription for healing from divorce wounds. How would you describe your book then?
Well, the way I describe it is it's written for regular people. I actually had a person the other day tell me how much they appreciated it, because they weren't book readers, but they were able to get into this because it's just very straightforward, very plain. But what it does is it provides a sense of you're not walking through your experience alone. There are other people who have gone through this, and some of the hints they gave can be very helpful. As a matter of fact, the book contains a lot of hints that people gave to me that I just pass on. And it also is just a way to help people who are going through this be able to sort out for themselves how their life is going to be and how their faith is going to be and how can they get in touch with God again if they feel like they've lost him or he's lost them, and what trying to share some teaching, like you said, of things the scripture talks about, the kind of character that God is, it can be there for us when we need him to be there.
This is volume one, and you headline that Autumn and Winter, Seasons of Loss and Sorrow. So volume two is Spring and Summer?
Yeah, Spring and Summer, and it's the idea of warmth and renewal and hope, because there comes a point, and the seasons like are not about the nature seasons, they're about the seasons of your experience going through a divorce. Because the first part is everything falls apart and you begin feeling all the loss. But there comes a point when, just like, you know, in springtime when you look down and there's a crocus or the leaves start to bud, that happens in your heart and in your life in divorce. It comes a point when you kind of begin to think, well, maybe it's going to be okay. And gosh, maybe this will help and that will help. And then there's lots of things about how are you going to put together, you know, the next phase of your life. And that's what Volume 2, and that's supposed to come out sometime next spring.
What if someone isn't a Christian?
You know, then for them, they may choose not to read all of it. They may, the daily devotions or the meditations are, because so much of it is personal experience and sharing of things I've heard and learned and seen, a lot of it will connect anyway. They may or may not choose to do the scripture readings in there, but that's okay. And there's things in it, maybe they're not a Christian, but maybe at this point they feel like, you know, they're discovering, well, who is God? What is that? There's stuff in there to help that person if they're trying to find God in it too.
So at a time when we're going through so much heartache or frustration, confusion, we may not know where to turn, here your book is, in a simple way, giving the Word of God, and then there are those who are desperately hungry for the Word of God.
Well, not only that, and there's also people who have family members or loved ones or friends or parishioners that they look and they watch their lives and they see it falling apart with divorce, and they want to try to help somehow, but it's hard to figure out how. And this is a pretty tangible thing that somebody can share with a friend, and it can make a lot of difference for them.
Sounds like a great gift for this time of year for folks we know who are going through this kind of an experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In the holiday season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, if it's especially the first one, it's a very difficult time. And something like this can maybe give them hope.
We've been listening to Richard D. Crooks. He is the author of his book, Finding God in the Seasons of Divorce. This is Volume 1, and there is a Volume 2 coming in the spring. Volume 1, Autumn and Winter, Seasons of Loss and Sorrow. Of course, Volume 2 will deal with the hope of spring and summer.
Yeah.
Well, Richard, tell us how to get your book.
Well, there's several ways you can get it. The website is under construction, should be up soon. That's Finding God Devotionals. But you can find me on Facebook. Just look up Finding God in the Seasons of Divorce. I have a blog. You could Google, do some kind of a search on Seasons of Divorce, and it'll pop up in there. So you can order directly from me. You can order from the publisher, Westbow Press. You can order it online from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and other places. It's also available as an ebook for people that like the Nooks and Kindles and all that. You can get them that way as well.
Thank you, Richard, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski. A live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, A Light in the Darkness, Insights of a Christian Southern Gentleman. And the author is C. Ernie Nivens. And Ernie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Inspiring Voices. Hello, Ernie.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Boy, do we need a lot of hope and encouragement, and that's what I see your book is all about. You really want to help us kind of see life the way it used to be, and I guess what we could recapture, and you also are working on a new volume, Volume 2, of these kinds of stories from your experiences through life. You talk about your book, you say, you've written a mirror of life that helps grab hold to hope and courage. You also say, my 40 years of eye-to-eye, heart-to-heart, synchronization with people, relationships provide the foundation for my writings, not theory. Well, that's what life is all about, isn't it? It's relationships.
Exactly.
You've had a life filled with them. Well, first, start with a little bit of about your background, Ernie, and then how this book all came about.
Okay. For 20 years, I was a Methodist minister all around South Carolina. I saw so many people getting hurt by money, the lack of it, the misuse of it, or excessive taxes by the federal government. I saw farmers die and their family having to sell the farms to pay the taxes. So I decided to shift my ministry from parish ministry to financial ministry. And I've been doing that for 23 years now. On July 1st, 2007, I had a near-fatal bicycle accident. Really cracked my head open on the back. They tell me I about died. I woke up July 28th. And the doctor told me to go home and just sit, do nothing but read, take it easy. take time to heal or recover. Well, I'm not a sitting kind of guy. So it gave me the opportunity to complete this book that I had been working on for some years. And I'm so glad that I had that accident, because it launched a new opportunity for this written ministry. Now my book's being sold in India, Germany, Japan, America, around the world. It's just marvelous. So I'd like to think that people are finding a new sense of hope in their basic Christian faith.
So you've taken the Bible, the well, obviously focused principles of truth, you've taken that and you've just kind of helped us better understand these principles through your life experiences?
Yes, through my life experiences and everyday events and conversations and unique people and finding God and daily living. That's the key. It's still the key.
Well, it always has been the key. And today, given the tremendous stress of these latter days before the Lord returns, it's needed even more, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I got a story in my book about burning away the sludge. In the 80s, I knew this man who made homemade molasses. And he invited me to come help him. So we worked this mule and grind this cane, sugar cane, and captured all the sugar juice out of it. And he had a cooker like 8 feet long on an incline. He would pour the sugar on the top end. It would go to the right, then to the left, back and forth, until the very bottom. And there's a fire underneath. Not a gas fire, but real fire, burning fire with coals. By the time that sugar got to the bottom, it was molasses. But along the way, there was some sludge that developed as a stem on top of the liquid. So he gave me a broom handle that had part of a window screen attached to the bottom. And my job was to scoop up the sludge and dump it in a bucket, thereby purifying the liquid. Now, you know what? It's the same thing today, every day, especially in the world now. We have to scoop up the sludge and get rid of it.
That is for sure. That was very well put. Well, there's certainly such a, as you point out, a deep-seated hunger for hope, purpose, and meaning today.
Another story that I like to tell in there is we lived down in Conway, South Carolina for a while, and next to us was a Air Force base at Myrtle Beach. It's no longer there, but it was there at the time. And they had these A-10 jets down there. Those are the jets that dive straight down and fire rockets at tanks and then turn and go straight back up. It's like you're flying for a crash, and then you turn it skyward at the last second. I talked to some of the pilots. I said, man, that must be really scary, flying this plane straight at the earth. He said, well, we're trained properly, not to worry. He said, but you have to have a sense of relaxed power. That phrase grabbed me. That's daily living, especially in 2012, 2013, we have to live every day with relaxed power. Knowing, of course, that power comes from the living God who gives us hope and courage and commitment and faith and strength by our faith in the risen Jesus Christ.
So don't panic.
Not at all.
And of course,
panic is a lack of faith.
Right. Yeah, lack of faith, fear, of course. The antithesis of faith is fear, and, you know, any kind of panic. It's easy to go that direction, though. Boy, people get under so much anxiety and so much fear of the unknown of what may happen. There's so many people out of work today and wondering how in the world are they going to make it. It's real, isn't it?
It is real and sad for a lot of people. And my word to them is you have to maintain the faith. God has not forsaken or forgotten you. He's promised that. But we can't sit back and expect God to just drive the limousine to our front door.
Yes, that's for sure.
We got to go get it.
And it may require some more sacrifice. And before we can be given that great reward that we're looking for, obviously the scriptures are filled with stories about sacrifice.
That's right. And sacrifice is just a step on the way toward the fulfillment of faith.
One of the things that you seem to have done is not only addressed these kinds of needs, this need for hope and purpose of life and meaning of life. You've done it with emotion, but you've also done it with humor.
Yeah, I like using humor a lot.
That's important, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Shall I talk to you about cooking frogs?
Oh, please.
When I was in parish ministry, I was asked to lead this church through some significant change. And this is down in the very rural part of South Carolina. So I explained it to the church in a church meeting. And boy, they chewed me up and spat me out. They don't like change. So that afternoon after the meeting, Mr. Hammersmith called me, and he says, Ernie, said, I want you to go fishing with me Tuesday morning. Well, Mr. Hammersmith had an invitation-only pond, so I jumped at the chance. Met him out there. We fished for 2 hours, and he didn't say a word. Finally, we pulled the boat back over near the pier, and he said, now, Ernie, I want you to know why I called you out here. I want to tell you that in 1917, I was in Clemson College, and I had a professor there that taught me how to cook frogs. If you take a pot of hot water, boiling hot water, and throw an old frog in there, he can't stand it. He jumps out. The change is too much, too fast. But if you take a pot of cold water and put that old frog in there, I let him swim around and get used to it and feel at home. You can turn up the heat 1 degree at a time, and you'll cook that frog to death. He said, we're like that frog. You threw us in the pot, and we threw you out. Take your time with us. Take us just a degree at a time, and we'll follow you anywhere you want to go.
Well, that's really good advice, isn't it?
Well, that's true in living, especially in these days.
Sure.
We may be unhappy with our world, and I am, as like everybody else is, so distraught with how the world has turned. But we have to realize we can't change this world overnight. We have to work with our children and young people, change our culture, help them come back to God, to realize the power of faith in Jesus Christ. And day by day, we can change this world.
You and I grew up at a golden time, right after World War II. There's an example of what life could be.
Absolutely. We used to be able to play at night barefooted in the summer, not worried about somebody stealing us or harming us. And we knew when my daddy used to come on the front porch and whistle. Mm-hmm. I knew it was time to go home.
That's right. That's right. It was a great time to experience America in its fullest. That's really, I'm sure there were other times through the history of this country that had those same kinds of feelings, but there was such right after the war, there was such a vitality in the country and such a faith in God and a faith in each other, and literally there wasn't anything we couldn't accomplish.
That's right. I think you just hit it on the head. that after World War II, there was a sense of gratitude to God.
Mm-hmm.
That this America, the America then drew closer and closer to God. Since then, we kicked him out of our schools, kicked him out of our courts, and walked away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And we wonder why the world is so messed up today.
Well, you said it so well. There it is. There it is. That's the very, very problem, the biggest obstacle of this country faces. It isn't government. It's not that we're not following God like we used to. And he has blessed us so much. That always happens, though, doesn't it? The scriptures are filled with those cycles.
That's right. I remember a fellow who told me one time he and his wife are riding down the road, and she was sitting on her side of the car, and he was, of course, driving the car. And he said to her, he said, "You remember the days you used to sit over here next to me and how you used to hug up and you used to play with my ear and bite on my earlobe as I was driving?" She said, "Yes, I remember those days." Well, he looked at her and said, "Well, I didn't move." It's kind of like us with God, you know. God hadn't moved.
No, he's always the same, isn't he? He never.
That's right.
He's always there. He's always the same, yesterday, today, and forever. Well, you're often called the Will Rogers of the South, and now we know why.
Well, thank you. That's quite a compliment.
Well,
thank
it
you.
Is quite a compliment, and I agree. You know, you're real laid back, and you got some wisdom, and you kind of got an easy way of talking to us, and I'm sure your book is just like that. A Light in the Darkness, Insights of a Christian Southern Gentleman. Ernie, tell us how to get your book.
Go to inspiringvoices.com, and you can order it there. Inspiring Voices is a division of Guidepost, and they can order it there.
Very good. See Ernie Nivens. That's who we've been listening to, and please order his book, A Light in the Darkness, Insights of a Christian Southern Gentleman. Thank you so much, Ernie, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
I'm honored. Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Inspiring Voices.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The System Redesigned. this time for children and taxpayers. And the author is Norma Simpson Wilt. And Norma joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Inspiring Voices. Hello, Norma.
Hello.
Great to have you with us. You have some very great insight into our education system for our children. You've been a teacher for many, many years, and you've written your book to try to explain why basically half our country is functionally illiterate. That's overwhelming when we think about that. Your personal experiences to help us to understand this key principle that you really advocate, this principle called readiness, and we'll talk more in detail about that. But first of all, Norma, tell us about yourself and your background and why you decided to write your book.
Well, I was a teacher, and I taught in first grade, second grade, and fourth grade during different school systems. And then I, watching the failure of those who run the school systems to educate our children well, properly, if at all. And what they're doing is they're not looking at the child. They're looking for answers everywhere else, but not at the child. What does the child need? And they miss the point that not every child is the same and can work at the same pace or at the same level. And I saw that, worked with it, so discouraged. Watched the children's faces as they walked to the lowest reading group and saw what we were doing to them, and I just had to do something, and that's why I wrote the book.
So let's start out with this principle that you call readiness. What is that all about? How do we individually help children?
You wait for those to mature. Normally, the nervous system of a five-year-old is not fully developed, and the neuronal pathways that run from the eyes to the brain and the ears to the brain may not be set or fixed. They don't all mature at the same rate. The things that help them focus on a sound or translate the sound into a word may not be fixed in a lot of children. And this is what we're missing. So we need to, when we used to do it right, every child read, and most of them went to college, you take your children that are not ready and you work with them so they can succeed. Success is the big part of it. You can't make them sit and feel like a failure and expect them to be a well-rounded human being. And then you take a group that's ready but not fully, and then you work with that group, and then you have your children that need to be growing at a very faster pace. We're wasting everyone in the system. We're making the children that aren't ready sit next to the ones that are ready. They feel like a failure, and the ones that are ready are sitting there knowing 70% of what's being said. So it's a waste in every direction. Mm. We need to let children succeed and not frustrate them and to feel like a failure.
So
it's all a matter of when they mature.
Yes, this system, as you call it, when teachers aren't allowed to teach in the ways children learn. So the system, what is the system demanding? It's not looking at the needs of the children or the way children learn, but what is the system, what's the system all about?
Well, we're top heavy, and we keep, when we have failure rates, we keep hiring another expert, another administrator, and there's where all your money's going, most of your money's going. But they're not focusing on the child. The parents, too, want their child hidden. They don't want them in a room where they can succeed and learn. They're afraid they'll have a name attached to that room, but what they're missing is when the child's sitting in a classroom, it's right before their eyes, and he feels like a failure. We need to separate them until they are ready, and then they take off happily. We want to take them happily and not make them feel. Their self-image is so important to learning, and when we make them feel like a failure, month after month, year after year, they think they are a failure.
Well, one of your chapters, you asked the big question, how did our system get this bad? How did it get this bad?
Well, people, can't explain it fully, but people they can't let well enough alone. If it works, they've got to fix it. I don't know if we see this in a lot of things. Area, it worked. We didn't leave it alone. Some parents thought their children were socially made fun of when they were in a room where they were, you know, getting themselves ready. And then we hired another expert, and then the state comes into it. And in some states, they're not allowed to even be an educator to tell us what to do, many miles removed. And then we hired more administrators, and then we got top-heavy. And these people don't know what they're talking about. And they won't listen. I was a reading specialist, and they told me what I could and couldn't do. People that were not even educated to this. And they took away my phonics, and you take away phonics. And I said, well, somebody had a new idea, a whole language. And I said, well, how do you start this out? Well, they said, we sit them in a seat, get pencil and paper, and start writing. I said, writing what? Well, what they want to, and I spell the words for them. And I mean, I was just, I could not believe my ears. But when you take away phonics, no child's going to be able to sound out all the words that come at them through the years, and more new words every year. And it's just a bunch of people running it that have not a clue. They will not look at what the child needs.
Well, it seems like I just can look at my, you know, look back on when I was young, we just dealt with the basics. It was just real basic, but it's just gotten, there's too much intellect involved here now. Is that what we're trying to do? Always, like you're saying, we're always trying to, come up with the new better,
idea.
Improved plan that just doesn't work.
Doesn't work because, see, we got it started wrong, and we don't know how to fix it, so we keep adding new programs. One school system in another state spent millions on a computer system. They were going to bring their scores up. They were horrified when the scores kept falling. You can't do all these new ideas. People make a name for themselves with a new idea.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do whole language, and they made a name for themselves, and this is great. Well, it wasn't great for the children. And the whole goal of a teacher should be to take their children as far as they can academically and physically, emotionally, mentally, happily. And that's a very important word, happily. And let them feel good about themselves and not be frustrated into hatred of school.
What about the golden rule? You advocate the golden rule, which to some may sound like it's some kind of a religious mandate.
Oh no, every religion has a golden rule. It's in the book. I list all of them. Buddha, Confucius, they all have one. Probably because all wise men knew we couldn't really survive without it. I never mention the Bible. I'm not teaching a religion. All I'm doing is when a child hits another child, I said, well, would you want him to hit you? Well, no. Well, then we don't hit them. We treat them like we'd like to be treated. And where are they learning this? Where are most of our children hearing this? They're not. And an hour on Sunday morning isn't going to do it, but I lived it with them, and I'm not teaching religion at all. I'm teaching a rule that every religion has. And I didn't even name it as a rule. I didn't even name it as golden rule, and I didn't mention the Bible. I just taught them how to treat another person like themselves. And they're not. And one minister said, well, I hope we hear that in church. Well, they don't. And how many children don't go to church or hear it anywhere? And I used it all day, so it became kind of fixed in their mind. We treat the other person. And I did it mainly for the bright child that's sitting there next to the child that's not ready. We don't make fun because we don't want to be made fun of. It's very simple. It's people tried to make it into something religious, and it wasn't.
Well, one of the another startling figure that you promote what's really going on, this is reality. 75% of our young people could not pass the test to enter the armed forces.
That was on the news the other night, yes.
My goodness, that is startling.
Steve, what I'm trying to tell people, how you treat your children affects how your country's going to be. They're not looking beyond their nose. This is our country at stake as well as our children. And that's my big push. Let's fix our children. Let's teach our children so our country can continue to be a leader. It's not a leader now in education. I think we're 25th now in science. And there was a notice in the paper. It said that in one state, they're doing a study of their youth on Jersey Shores, while in India, they're teaching math. And this is kind of the problem. And I want them to see the long range also. This is our country at stake.
Of course, we have, like you pointed out, we're spending lots of money on buildings and administrators. How do we turn it around? How do you get, the school boards, the local school boards, to take control of? They seem, in the school board meetings I've often been at, they seem to be just a rubber stamp of what the superintendent wants.
Superintendent, right. Exactly. The answer's in the book. I'm advocating a citizens group. A citizens group is going to have to get mad enough and care enough to join maybe a pediatrician and a businessman and a small group and march in and ask to look at the books. You can do this. The Sunshine Law allows it. And where is all our money going?
Mm-hmm.
You see, the superintendent sets his own, most of the time, sets his own salary. I mean, there's no governor. And so he has a large salary, and he has a lot of perks. In one district I interviewed across the country, part of his income was a membership in the area country club. People don't know what they're spending their money for, but it's going. But anyway, the citizens group marched in. They didn't get into the classroom. They should have had a teacher with them. I mean, if I could have gone with them. But they got into the finances. They found 140 positions to be completely unnecessary. And that's where you start. I can't fix the whole country, but if I could get one citizens group in one city to march in and do a model school, and when it succeeds, then maybe it'll catch on. But I can't do the whole country at one throw. But we need a citizens group, and that's in the book. That's in the book, how to do it. And then they could also have some kind of governor on these salaries. In one school district, the superintendent got a 6% raise plus what we got. When we got 2%, he got an 8% raise. When we got nothing, he got a 6% raise. We're overlooking the two most important segments of a school system. What are they? What's the two important segments of a school system? That's completely glossed over, but it's the children and the teachers. And the school system should be there to help the teachers and help them in this rough job they have, but instead they send in supervisors to make some supervisors are, I never use all and every, some supervisors are all right, I guess, but the ones that I had came in and did such silly things that it hindered my teaching. And we need to not hinder the teachers. We need to help them and support them.
Well, and I know that many times in schools today, the non-teacher as opposed to the teacher used to be, like you say, in a supportive role, but now it's almost like one-to-one, whereas it used to be, there was only a few of the non-teaching support system there, but now that is just grown and grown and grown.
In one system across the country, I'm never naming one school system, you understand. It happens in many, but
right. One
state I was in, I was being shown around the school, and they said that when a principal does something wrong, he cannot be demoted. He has to be given a lateral or a promotion. And so then that school district, they made him assistant superintendent, which they didn't need. And instead of demoting him, they made him assistant and then with a corresponding salary. And in time, that district had three assistant superintendents at a huge salary because they had done something wrong and they couldn't be demoted. I mean, these rules that they make up for their own, something like our government, but they make up for their own good, which just takes more and more money. And then when people get wise and ask questions, then they do cute little things like, well, they let them go at a great incentive to leave when they see it's a duplication in function, and then they hire them back under a different title. So you're out double the money because you paid the incentive to leave. They do many, many financial things. Some districts, not all. Let me make sure that you understand. I'm not talking about all districts. I'm just talking about ones I've interviewed all across the country, and those are some of the things I found out.
We've been listening to Norma Simpson Wilt. She has her new book, The System Redesigned, this time for children and taxpayers. Norma, tell us how to get your book.
It's on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble bookstores.
And also you can get it from your publisher, Inspiring
right.
Voices.
Inspiring Voices, yes. I'm sorry.
Well, thank you so much, Norma, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, thank you, Steve, for having me. And I really appreciate you doing this.
Well, you have a lot of great ideas, and we look forward to seeing some progress in this area. Certainly a person like you can help us all understand what we can do. The System Redesigned, everyone. And this interview has been brought to everyone by Inspiring Voices.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.